Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
All right. We are joined today by one of my favorite people in the NFL and favorite tennis moms, Bills owner and Sabres owner, Kim Pegula, and more important, her daughter, Jessie, who is one of the top American stars on the tennis tour and currently ranked 33 in the world, from what I can tell, which is pretty unbelievable. So thanks so much, you guys, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Yeah, Mike, your persistence paid off.
How annoying was he? Did he give you the full?
You know what? And not anymore annoying than usual, but it worked. That's fair. Got Jessie to come on.
I'll take that. I wouldn't if it were just for you.
She asked me one time and I said sure. So I don't.
Of course you did. And by the way, if it were just to book Kim or Terry, I would have stopped, but it was for a more important pursuit. So Jessie, you know,
that's right.
By the way, how many times do you think he had to ask me to agree to come on with him as his co-host? Because that was a brutal ask.
Also annoying.
a lot.
So Jessie, while we were all locked down and, you know, football had no fans and the sports world was in this weird place, you know, you were out there crushing, and all of a sudden there you are in a tense quarterfinal match at a Grand Slam tournament across the globe. And I'm thinking, A, this is awesome, and B, your parents can't even be there. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Tennis started back up last year. So we did play, you know, with COVID, with no fans. Australia, we had some fans, but for my quarterfinal match, we didn't have any fans. So yeah, it's just been kind of weird with everything, but I think it was obviously something really good to come out of, you know, a tough situation that everyone's dealing with. So it was just, yeah, it was a really cool moment. And it's nice that we were lucky enough to play and that I was able to make the most of it. And then obviously the Bills having a good playoff run at the same time while I was in Australia was pretty cool. So there's a lot going on.
That's awesome. I know you've had some injuries in the past. When you were in Australia, did you ever have a moment where you just like took a step back and you were like, how did I get here? Or was there ever a moment that you were just kind of amazed and didn't think you would ever be there?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like, I guess kind of, I don't know, a sense of relief a little bit, I think, after I beat Azarenka first round, because there were fans there. And it was just nice to have the crowd there and the atmosphere, and then get a big win was cool. And it was kind of like, okay, like, a lot of it paid off, which I've had a lot of those moments the last, I would say, like couple of years, really. But that was, again, probably, I think every so often you have that moment of kind of, okay, this was worth it. And that probably after my first round, that was one of them.
So, okay. So I'm a sports parent and I'm not, you know, necessarily subtle. So I want to give some perspective here. First of all, like, as powerful as Jessie is on the court, you're very modest off of it. I mean, when I met you, you were going through some injury stuff and, you know, you weren't ranked very high. And I'm kind of a tennis nerd. I grew up with tennis players. I was asking you a bunch of questions and you totally downplayed. You're like, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to fight my way on, you know, blah, blah, blah. Very chill. Then Kim has always been unbelievably chill, like resisting the temptation that I would have to brag about her daughter. But I have to say that Terry, who is not on this call, so Kim and Terry and I had dinner in Pittsburgh 2 summers ago in 2019. And Jessie, you had just won your first tournament. And so, you know, I know this is going to shock you, but drinks were served and, you know, a few glasses of wine in, Terry started doing what I would expect any sports parent to do, which is talking about how great you were. And he was like, she is on her way. She's been through this stuff, but now she's going to win a Grand Slam. And he was like, I'm telling you, he was just going off. So I was even like, wow, is he a little over the top? But now I would say that, you know, maybe he was justified.
He can be a little dramatic on both ends, like the good side and the bad. He'll be very dramatic either way. Like, oh, I don't know. I mean, mom knows, you know, you're kind of always like, oh yeah. Like, not going to lie, I feel like your compliments are few and far, but you're always like the same. And then my dad's like every day, like with every win and loss, he's like, what were you doing? And then he's like, great win. And then it's just like back and forth. So I'm just kind of like, okay, dad, whatever. So.
Who does better in person?
Well, are you muted?
Sorry. Well, dad came in and he started talking about something. So I had to mute myself.
Right. I didn't know.
No, I'm saying, well, that's why I have to be very even and just almost monotone to kind of, you know, equalize your dad from one end to the other.
Yeah, so. He's very emotional. He gets very, it's kind of funny.
How does he do in person at the matches? And Kim, how do you do? What, like, who's, Jessica, who stresses you out more?
My mom gets really nervous and like can't watch and just goes off and like eats things, I guess, like goes to the vendors, like wants to check out, like, you know, more of like a fan, like goes, tries all the food and like wants to go see what's around the stores and stuff like that. My dad literally could care less. He wants to be like in the players lounge with me, like next eating food with me. What are you guys going to go do? He wants to be like in the inner circle. And then, yeah, mom, you're more just like, I don't want to be around anyone. I don't even want you to see me. Like, she'll just go off and like do whatever. So it's really opposite, but she definitely gets more nervous during the matches. And then my dad, he's actually okay during the matches. Like, he's not like crazy or anything, but like afterwards he'll either get, you know, worked up depending on how the match goes.
Wait, that's so funny. Okay, can one of the three of you guys explain, dad, you were kind of starting to get into this, but I was like, no, I want to save it for the podcast. Can one of you guys explain the tennis fan etiquette? Because from what you were saying, like, I mean, we're used to football, obviously, soccer, hockey, where you'll cheer when the other team fucks up or mm-hmm. when something good happens for your team. But it seems like tennis, there's more... I don't know.
It's more rules. Of a polite etiquette, I guess.
Yeah.
But isn't
it? People still scream and yell and stuff, but I think it's more kind of like more similar to golf where like you're really not supposed to like be super loud, like, you know, right before the person's going to serve or like yell things or stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, afterwards, like the US Open's always really rowdy because it's in New York. So I think it depends on where you are. And like Wimbledon can get really crazy because everyone's drinking like Pimm's and stuff, so everyone gets like wasted off Pimm's. And like if there's a British player, like usually the crowd is really bad, like they'll be like totally against the other player, going crazy for, which, you know, is typical. But I think like those are where it's more rowdy than usual. But yeah, it's more of like a, you're supposed to be more of a polite etiquette like before the point's about to start and obviously during the point.
But is there's like a passive aggressive edge, I feel like, sometimes having grown up with tennis players, for everything from what you guys might mutter to yourselves mm-hmm. to, you know, that little excited cheer on an unforced error that you're not supposed to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It's very passive aggressive. So you'll have like that one fan, yeah, that really doesn't mean any harm. Or like, you know, like if someone double faults and you get some obnoxious fan that's like cheering for you, and the other player will kind of give them like a look if they see who it is, like, are you serious? It's very passive aggressive is a good word to describe it, because that's kind of how it is.
Has Terry ever cheered for an opponent's unforced error or double fault?
No. He's usually pretty good. He'll only just cheer for me. He doesn't really do, yeah, any of that, any antics or anything. He's not like one of those crazy parents where he's, yeah.
I feel like he wouldn't take it well, though, if some obnoxious fan was cheering after your double fault, like near him.
I don't even know if he would know. Maybe afterwards. I don't know. It depends on how the match is going. If it's a super tense match, maybe, but he wouldn't say anything. He just, you know, maybe mutter to the coach or talk about it or something, but I feel like he'd be too focused.
Like, who's the most competitive person in your family, including Bill's games, including Sabres, and including tennis?
Probably my mom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really,
really bad.
Any stories? Yeah.
I don't know. Just like everything. Everything's like a competition. Oh, well, I did this better. It doesn't have to be. It just does not even sports, because you don't really like play any sports. It's like other things. So it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
Business stuff.
Yeah, they do. They like to joke, you know, when I'd make a comment, they'd be like, "Mom, it's not a competition." And I don't even mean it to be a competition. I just, I don't know. I'm always, I don't know.
Trying to compare. Win. At whatever like yeah. the task is. So I would say, honestly, she's probably the most, but then I feel like when you're playing tennis or something, that you're not as competitive. It's more of like
the yeah. When it's like physical. Do. Yeah. If it's something physical, I'm probably not as competitive unless it's like meaningless, but yeah, probably everything else. Yeah, probably. Yeah,
definitely.
Well, I mean, I've watched a game with you or games. So I've seen you like with your sugar binging and hiding in the bathroom and, you know, kind of unraveling. And Terry's more like up there, like in the front, like yeah. really locked in. So, and you know, yeah.
It's like random. I don't know. Random nerves and competitiveness. You're like the opposite of like what you should be. You're like competitive with like baking cookies, but then you're like hiding in the bathroom and the Bills games and like my matches. It's really weird. It's like the opposite of what you think it should be.
Do you ever look up hoping to see your parents at a key moment, like kind of, you know, for that security blanket, and she's just not there?
Well, she's never at my matches, so she's never there.
I'm there sometimes. I very much pick and choose which matches I want to see, and they're usually like in places I want to vacation at. So when like she's in France, or when she's, you know, in, I don't know, I've been to some Japan. I've actually been able to kind of travel and live out some of my traveling dreams. Using her as the excuse is, well, I want to go watch her, you know, play in, you know, where Brazil, right? Because I've never been to Brazil. So I've used her over the years to travel.
I feel like one difference between your parents is, Jesse, your mom is like, wow, I could fly to France and see a match. And your dad's like, I could drive 22 hours and be there for the first round.
Yeah.
Describe your dad's weird road warrior like lifestyle.
Yeah, he likes to drive. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. He just, yeah, not that he's afraid to fly. He just doesn't like the nuisance of it all. So yeah, when we're going, you know, somewhere like to make a 20 hour trip to Australia, he doesn't really want to go through all that. So he just wants to like, oh, sorry, my dog's barking. Sorry, hold on.
Okay, our dog usually interrupts the podcast, so we're pro. But like Kim, doesn't Terry just crush McDonald's on those trips? Like he goes hard on Mickey D's.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say like when, especially if she has a tournament in the US, he'll just get in his car and will want to drive. So like she said, he won't fly to Australia, but he'll drive, you know, from Florida to Michigan to see a tournament. Right. Like he'll do it like randomly. Cause he'll just like get up one day and be like, I think I'm going to go to see a tournament. Right. And just start driving.
Definitely has places that he likes too. Like even when I was playing like the challengers, I feel like he almost liked those better because he could just like go in, go watch, do whatever he wanted, like drive anywhere he wanted. He likes like Midland, Michigan. There was always like, there still is like a challenger there that I'd always play. And it would always be like snowy and cold. And he likes that. Like it's a tiny little town and he can drive through Saginaw or whatever and across the border. And he like likes the whole aspect of that. And then, yeah, like he loves tournaments like that. Like ones where he feels like, I don't know, that he's in like Buffalo or Pittsburgh or, you know, that sort of feel. So it's funny. He definitely doesn't, the opposite, like with COVID, mom, you haven't been able to come to any, now that I'm in like all the bigger tournaments with all the restrictions, she hasn't been able to come. So like, I'm going to Madrid, Rome, Paris, and then like Wimbledon after. And she's like, I can't go to any of these places.
Yeah. All the good places. Like I would definitely be there watching her and doing other stuff, but I would definitely be going. She went to Dubai and I always wanted to go to Dubai, but you know, you couldn't leave your hotel and there really wasn't a reason to go, unfortunately. Yeah. So, maybe next year.
So Jesse, when you were playing challengers and like really trying to fight your way into the mix, did you have any moments where you were kind of like, I don't know if this is going to happen and is it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, I think you always have those moments, especially after like bad losses or something. But I think as long as you have like a short-term memory about it, I mean, I think it's normal, but also, I mean, there are times where it's like really hard and you're thinking like, when is it going to happen? But at the same time, you see it happen so quickly. Like all you need is one or two good tournaments. And then all of a sudden, like the confidence comes with it and you can kind of break into whatever it is you're trying to break into. Cause yeah, sometimes you get stuck with the rankings and it's hard, but then you see, you know, I think it's motivating to see other players and other girls that you know, or you've practiced with, and it happens to them and it happens to people around you. And you start thinking, okay, I just have to like keep working and wait for my moment. So, it's definitely a grind like mentally, but, I think as long as you keep a positive mindset about it, I mean, I think it'll happen as long as you're doing the right things, but it's always in the back of your mind. I mean, even now it's like, I could lose and be back in the challengers, you know, like you're always fighting to stay at the top. That's what's so interesting about tennis is you really are earning your way every time, you know, your money, your points is you have to win matches. So there's always like that little bit of pressure, kind of in the back of your mind, but yeah.
Wow. And is tennis, you only get paid if you win, right?
Pretty much. I mean, like you make your money off of winning matches. Like there's no, obviously like first round, big tournaments, first rounds will have like a set prize money, even if you lose. But as you're starting up, you only get points or earn money by winning matches. There's no like set salary. Here you go. You can play how many tournaments you want and it doesn't matter how you do. You're earning your way every match, which is what makes it so tough.
Yeah. How have you navigated, you know, just like your parents are the owners of the Bills and the Sabres and big names. And I'm sure that as you're coming up, when people are starting like do media on you, I'm sure people always love to bring in that hook. Mm-hmm. Has that been difficult navigating that and like trying to be your own person, or has it helped you?
No, I don't really think so. I mean, I think it's been kind of fun because you've like run into people, even people that work in the media that are like, oh, I went to Buffalo or my parents are from Rochester, or like, there's always like a lot of ties, which is really cool. So, I mean, I think I just try to have fun with it more than, try to like differentiate myself from it because it's always going to kind of be there. So I think it's more, I think I just have fun with it. I think it's more of a fun thing that I get to do that's different than other players. And, I kind of see it more like that than really, you know, like a burden or this, you know, kind of thing following me around. But yeah, it does come up a lot. I mean, pretty much every time.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an NFL Network reporter following you for an entire weekend with a film crew other than when I was following Kim?
Yeah. Actually, I think we were going to think about do NFL. It's kind of cool how I've like, I don't know, I guess brought the NFL and tennis together a little bit. It's funny because a lot of the Europeans don't really know anything about it. They're like, whatever. They don't even know. They're like, huh? Like, but a lot of the American guys will be like, oh, those Bills, how's the draft, or the Sabres? Like, you know, really into like hockey and, you know, football, American football. So I get a lot more questions from them. But other people, like a lot of the Europeans, they're like, whatever. We don't even know how it works or what they're watching half the time.
I will say when Jesse was her matches, especially the Australian, there were so many people in Buffalo that were watching her. Like I would be getting text messages from folks that I haven't heard from saying there. And I was like, I didn't even know you liked tennis. I didn't even know you knew. But like, so when she was playing in the major, yeah, there was like, it was the opposite effect. Like everyone was asking me about Jesse, you know, versus asking me about the Bills. So it was really great to see the whole city kind of really was rooting for her.
That's super fun.
How were your nerve levels in her Australia matches versus like Bills playoff games?
Oh, well, you know, so it was, it's a lot easier because I can control it. So what, you know, I can rewind, I can watch it later. So you can't do that in a football game. You can't like, you know, all her matches are recorded and you can like watch on demand. Like you can't do that at a football game. Like you have to be there in the moment.
Do you actually find out the result and watch it later? Or like, I feel like you would know.
No, I find out the results, but then I watch it later. Okay. Yes. Have done that. Then I enjoy it so much more.
If I win, you rewatch it. If I lose, I don't think you rewatch it. Do you?
No.
Play no point.
Yeah. Well, sometimes because she's playing international though, like some of her matches was like at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. And I'm just like, tell me when I wake up if she won or lost.
Yeah.
When did you guys realize that she was really good and needed to like start training in a competitive way?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to say probably Terry probably recognized it before I did. But I probably you were like five, I think five. Yeah. And we always laugh because just really good hand-eye coordination was really the start of it. And she played, Little League softball, baseball. Was it? Yeah, baseball.
Baseball.
Wow. Yeah, on the boys team. And so you really, you know, you could just see the hand eye coordination. And also, too, her older sister played tennis in college, so that's how she got into tennis. Was she would be following her sister around to all her tennis tournaments, and then she'd just start. You know, picking it up during practice. And I just remember this one time, her sister's name's Laura, was doing serves, and Laura's what, 12 years older than you? I forget.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So she, you know, Laura's like in, you know, early high school, right? And she's like hitting these serves, and Jessie's just there returning. Like, I mean, they weren't going in, but she was actually like getting a racket, and she's like 5 years old. And she was like hitting these serves back. And we're like, wow, like that's crazy. She's like, and she didn't even like, wasn't even worried that the ball was being hit at her. She was just standing there like hitting the ball back. We're like, what's going on here? So yeah, no, it was really at an early age. We saw it.
Wow. And then what happened? Then did you guys ultimately decide to get her a coach, or what was the next step?
Yeah, so she started playing, practicing and taking lessons. We were living in Pittsburgh at the time. But then we had a connection with someone that lived in South Carolina, a famous tennis coach that was starting an academy there. And we went down there for kind of like the week. And she's like, you're seven, I think, kindergarten, first grade. And, you know, like I said, you could just tell that this was something she really excelled well at, even at such a young age. And I don't know, we just, you know, we were fortunate. We were able to move, and we're like, hey, let's, you know, Jess, you want to keep playing tennis? Do you want to move? And so we moved to Hilton Head, South Carolina when she was 7 years old.
God, what do you want for me? So. That was really good.
So wait, move to South Carolina?
Yeah.
Is it specific to South Carolina, or is it just like move to where the good spot is?
It's specific to South Carolina because that's where the good spot is.
Mm. We were in Hilton Head, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been to Hilton Head. I'm sure it's nice. Yeah, I mean, you know me, I'm a Californian. I'm kind of like, you know, I mean, if Terry were here, we'd just get into like a big political argument like usual and yell at each other. And by the way, always civil. Just, you know, we're just very...
Californians are so diehard California.
I heard
New Yorkers or Jerseys. It's like so funny.
Yeah, and now they went to Cal too. So yeah. Poor child has been, you know, co-opted.
I also didn't realize that it was a thing. I remember there was one summer where I was interning in DC and we'd like visited the East Coast, but I'd never really been there for a long period of time. And I remember you sat me down and you're like, you know, it's just a different energy, and you know, we're going to come at you and they're going to judge you for being, I'm like,
Well, Jesse lived in California. What, 2 years, Jess? 1 year?
Yeah, when I was working with a coach, he was based out of LA. So I lived in Redondo Beach for like, oh, nice. probably 2 years, actually. That's back cool. and forth with tennis. But yeah, I liked it. It was nice, but it is really different. That's, I mean,
yeah.
I guess you think of it like is when you go to a different country or, you know, Europe, where there's like differences of where you are. It's, I think you forget because you're in the US, but it really is different everywhere you go.
Yeah, for sure. How did you do with the Bills games, Jesse, when you were, you know, you had to lock in on your own reality, but did you get to experience the playoff games or?
Yeah, they actually showed the playoffs when we were in quarantine in Australia. So, it was actually like the thing I got to look forward to while we were locked in our hotel room. So that was fun. We got to, watch the games and they were showing it, and the time difference wasn't that bad there to watch the game. So yeah, it was something to look forward to, and it was fun. And, I like watching it. I like watching on TV, to be honest, cause I like to see everything. Obviously, especially when there's not really any fans in the stadium, but, yeah, so it was good. I mean, it was kind of fun to watch, and for a good reason too, you know. I was playing Australian Open, so it was cool to see.
That's awesome. Okay. So Deb, when you going back to the New York, California, just kind of like clash thing, it reminded me of something that I wanted to ask him about. Didn't you, I don't know the story, but didn't you invite my dad to some sort of a business meeting where there were family members of Trump cabinet members there? I don't know what happened. I just know that, like, why would you do that for yourself?
Did I?
So here's what happened. So I was in Buffalo and Kim had a lot going on, but she's like, hey, I want to take you somewhere. Just meet me Saturday or I'll pick you up at the hotel and I'm going to take you somewhere. Well, they have this speakeasy that's incredible. And by the way, many amazing establishments in that part of Buffalo.
Are you not supposed to like,
including Jesse's The Healthy Scratch, which is my favorite place. But so she's like, hey, first she takes me to this like function and she's like, hey, I want to take you somewhere. And it's like a barber shop. That's weird. And it turns out it's this unbelievable speakeasy.
You're not supposed to tell the details, Dad.
Well, all I'm saying is, I'm not saying the location, but we're in there and she's like, hey, some people might come by. They're interested in buying into it's MLL, right?
Actually, I think it was the lacrosse league.
Yeah, the other lacrosse league. I always get them confused. Yeah. So, and you guys own a team in the lacrosse league, and this family was interested, and they show up, and they show up like 20 strong, and they're from Michigan and Florida, and they're super nice. And it finally, like I realize about, 20 minutes in, it's the DeVos family, and Betsy DeVos is the education secretary. You got to give me credit, though. I did not say a word. I was like the most well-behaved person possible.
Well, I did not know that she was that same family. So So I didn't do it on purpose. But yes, you did behave.
For the record, I did behave. I don't know if they ever bought the team, but like I feel like it was a good meeting. Everybody
really actually I don't think they did.
Oh, okay.
Now that you said that. I don't think they ever did pull the trigger on that.
If not, I'm not taking any responsibility for that. And then the last time I was out with Terry, he called, this was in Indianapolis at the combine right before the world shut down. He called me the next morning and said, quote, I want you to do me a favor. And I said, sure. And he said, the next time you are going to be anywhere near me geographically, I want you to warn me so I can leave. I cannot go out with you. Well, we just had kind of it started out. We were just like kind of drinking wine at the hotel bar. And the next thing you knew, we were sitting in a car waiting for people to bring us some steak and shake to go, burgers and shakes in an Uber.
I've heard so much
at like, very late hours. The combat is just, it's not, I don't know. The combat is not a wholesome place. Like, don't you, like Kim is so good and normal functions where I feel like, you know, she can handle any social mm-hmm. function, but the combine is no place for, you know, for someone.
I'm working. I am focused. I'm working at the combine.
Yeah.
I don't know what you, I mean, I know you say you're working, but I wasn't a part of that evening. So I was busy
I'm
working.
I'm not working like you're working. I mean, it's
she's like doing real work.
Right. I mean, my job is to, you know, yell something at an NFL coach at 4 a.m. across a bar and hope that it helps
the
relationship. Sometimes it doesn't. That was a literal quote from Terry. So because of COVID, we have not had a chance to test that theory, but we're hoping that in Pittsburgh, if all goes well, soon.
I know. Who knows? I do. I hope we're going to be able to have training camp there again this year. It wasn't bad having it at the facility. I know it was easy for in a lot of different ways, but just not the same atmosphere as Pittsburgh is.
So Jesse, I saw you played Serena recently.
Well, not this past year, the year before.
The year before. How was that?
It's kind of recently because it was the year, I think, it was the beginning of the year before COVID happened. So,
Right.
It feels like recent because tennis-wise, I guess there wasn't that many tournaments. But yeah, I mean, it was really cool. It was cool because I always say it's cool because it was a final, which is a lot cooler than playing her, you know, first round or second or whatever. So it was pretty cool to play her in a final. You know, and she played really well. It was a really high level match. And we had a cool, it was in New Zealand. So they had a cool, you know, ceremony thing. And it was really neat. It was cool. I have some really cool pictures and I wish I would have won, but you know, it was fine.
Did it all that it was Serena, or were you more just like focused on the fact that it was a final and you wanted to win?
I mean, obviously it's Serena, you know, they talk about it so much that you're always going to be thinking that, but I mean, I felt pretty comfortable. I think once you get going, you kind of, whatever, you get the adrenaline starts going and you're focused on the match. But it was definitely, a little bit of, oh, wow, I'm playing Serena. But then at the same time, it wasn't as intimidating as I thought it was going to be. Because again, once you get out there and you start playing, it really, I mean, you just want to win. And I kind of fades out a little bit on who's on the other side. I think probably before the match, you have a little bit of that feeling because we had like an on-court ceremony thing before. I was standing next to her, we're waiting, they're doing this dance and all this stuff. So yeah, you think about that at that point a little bit, but it wasn't honestly as intimidating as I thought.
Wow. Serena might've been like, man, she's hitting it back pretty hard. You know, like that's two pretty hard hitters on one court.
Yeah, it was fun. I actually broke her early and she actually played a couple. There was a couple like momentum shifts there where like, I think I could have won the first set maybe, but yeah, I mean, you could definitely feel like her presence on the court. I would feel like the power behind the ball and kind of, you know, when she's yelling, come on and stuff like that. Like you definitely feel her kind of turn it up a notch sometimes, which I think is what you see on TV. You just kind of feel it in a different way, more of it like coming at you, like with the ball and stuff. So that was definitely something I wasn't really used to. It was a high level match.
Okay, I'm curious of both of your positions about something that's super important to me. How do you guys feel about the whole like grunting, noise making while striking the ball?
My mom grunts when she plays.
Really?
Really?
She does.
Can you do one?
Yeah,
for
can
us?
You imitate?
No, you got it. Has to be in the moment. Like,
yeah,
you
know, because it's how it come out.
Yeah, the grunting is actually part of my like actual like form of how I hit the ball. Like the grunting actually gives me more power behind the ball when I hit it.
Really?
That's what I think. Yes. I feel like if I expel a grunt that it's forcing more power.
Is it an ugly grunt or is it a like very like ladylike grunt? How do we rate it?
Yeah. I mean, it's neutral.
Neutral.
It's not ladylike. It's not like, it's not weird.
Jesse, does it annoy you or like, does it get in your head when your opponent has a really annoying grunt or a really loud?
No. I honestly think most players, it doesn't really annoy you because it's like part of the game and you're so used to you're so used to it. And it is kind of natural in a way for people to breathe. But I mean, it's basically just like a way that people breathe when they're hitting the ball, but it does release a lot of nerves. Like when I think about playing and not grunting, it's like weird to me. I'm not like a huge grunter where I'm grunting like super loud or every point or all the time. But it's funny, like, I mean, some people think, oh, they're doing it on purpose. And I can guarantee that nobody's doing it on purpose. Like there's even girls that don't really grunt in practice and grunt in matches. And I honestly think it's like a nerve thing, you know, like it's not really a strategy or anything. Obviously there's some girls that have some ridiculous grunts, which I don't really understand, but I mean, it's just, I guess how they play. I don't know.
It's a good thing that I'm not good at tennis, because I would be like, I would be totally strategic about it. I'd like turn it up at key moments. Yeah. I'd be super obnoxious.
That's what I'm saying.
I'd get sarcastic. Yeah.
There was one girl at one time, like I was practicing with her and she's kind of funny. And she's like, she kind of does like the, when she knows she's going to lose the point, she does the little extra like dramatic. And she'd be like, she's like, you got to be a little bit dramatic. And I was just kind of laughing because it was just kind of funny. Like,
yeah,
I think some players maybe like with that stuff, they do think of it as kind of like a game, like it's fun, but it's not really like, I'm trying to make the person miss. And I honestly don't think anyone really would get hindered by like a long grunt. You know, and it's not like someone just randomly shouting out from the crowd or something like that. I think it's just because it's kind of like a rhythm thing too. Yeah. So yeah, I don't, yeah.
But you know,
so maybe some girls do, but
I feel like if I was in that position and I knew I was losing and I wanted to get in their head, I feel like that's what I would do. I would purposely.
But there's so many other ways to get in someone's head, right?
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, I don't really think a grunt would really do it that well, unless you really were like obnoxious and did all these weird noises, which would just be kind of weird. So no one really does that.
I always thought, you know, watching my friends play big juniors matches or whatever, or college, I always thought, you know, the catty little comment under your breath or the, you know, like those kind of things could be super effective too, you know?
Yeah. I always joke with like other girls. I'm like, we need to like have some fake fights or something, you know, like
yeah.
It's some drama, like WWE, like, hey, listen, like I'm going to yell at you. We're going to have like a fight on, you know, I don't know, something to like get more attention. Cause that's what guys are so much better at that, like doing it, but then also like leaving it on the court and they don't really take it off the court. You know, girls are so much more personal where you just give them one look on the court and it's like, oh my God, she gave me a look on the changeover.
Yeah.
You know, and it sticks with you forever. So yeah, it's funny because Taylor, my fiance, is like super competitive and he played baseball and he's always like, oh, I would do so many things. He's like, I would, you know, over the changeover. Oh, nice serve. Nice shot. Like,
yeah,
fantastic. Like get in their heads, like trash talk. But that's just like, so like going back to tennis etiquette, it's so not tennis etiquette. But that's why, I mean, you see like McEnroe and then now we have like Nick Kyrgios, who's like the modern day like McEnroe. And it does draw attention. I mean, whether people agree with it or not, it's pretty entertaining. I think
have you ever hit a ball at someone or had a ball hit at you?
Not on purpose.
See, that's I'm imagining someone like a competitor, like Draymond Green playing tennis, that mentality.
Yeah, he would do bad things, but
yeah. But it's just like not in like the tennis culture to really like, because it was very, it's really like supposed to be a proper sport. Obviously it's evolved, but yeah, I do wish there was some, I don't mind like the antics or people do crazy. I think it adds and it gets more people watching tennis. Cause I think sometimes people think tennis is like the exact opposite of the NBA. Like there's not a lot of personality.
So. I'm going to try to plot a situation where your dad and I can get some drinks and go to one of your matches and try to do like the passive aggressive, you know, see if I can stir it up a little bit. I won't be terrible, but I might, you know.
I'm trying to think of some things you've seen in soccer games.
Yeah, soccer, but see, I'm good with tennis because I did grow up around it. I think I could say just right up to the line something that would get the glare from your opponent.
Good. Wait, I remember one game specifically. There was a girl in soccer on the other team named Journey, who was like their star player, and they would always be like, "Journey."
She's playing this intense club game, and the parents on the other side are screaming, "Journey!"
And I just hear like at some point, "Hey, Legends, don't stop believing.
I mean, come on, it's just too easy. I wasn't mad at Journey. I was mad at the parents who decided to name their kid Journey. I mean, that's, Jesse's a normal name,
Stop.
Matthew, Ellie, like those are Natalie, Greg, Stop. Robbie. Those are normal names.
Jess, don't you have a tournament in Palm Springs? Are they still doing that this year?
Indian Wells?
Yeah.
Indian Wells, yeah.
Schedule it maybe for the fall if they can make it happen.
Okay.
Well, probably... we'll have to see where the Bills are and where I am, but I will try to go see you play as soon as fans are,
Yeah, I know. That's the thing.
You'll know he's there.
That's going to be my goal is to drive there with Terry, crush some McDonald's along the way, of course. And, if Terry hasn't stuffed me in the trunk yet, we'll be ready to roll. And then him can fly in. Go to the concession stands, eat some sweets, and we'll be here.
Actually, Mom, have you been to Indian Wells?
No. I've been to Palm Springs when you were little and you played, I think, Easter Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Easter Bowl is? Yeah.
I have some amazing stories about Indian Wells. When I was 32, I did the first big Sports Illustrated feature on one 16-year-old Anna Kournikova.
Oh, really?
That's spent cool. A few days with her. That was insane. And then I later amazingly met pretty young Venus and very young Serena there, wrote something on, I want to say Serena, very young. And I interviewed them while they got their nails done. You know, that little nail salon they would have for the players there.
Yeah. Wait, that's a thing?
Well, it's just part of the, it's part of the tour.
Sometimes the nicer tournaments will have you can go get a manicure, your haircut or something like that.
I'll tell you some of this later. I'm not going to bore you as you're a guest on my podcast, but I will tell you over drinks, hopefully not in front of any Trump cabinet members' families, but I will tell you the story. But I did. It's amazing because later I wrote a nice thing on Serena, and the next time I saw her, the only other time I've met her, a few years later, she was meeting Keyshawn Johnson, who was a big NFL star who I was hanging out with in LA, and they were maybe hanging out a little bit, and she just had such an edge to her, and by then she was a big star. And at one point I said, Serena, what happened to that sweet little girl that I saw at the nail salon? And she actually had if I remember, she had a great comeback. She was kind of like, yeah, well, I didn't hate it, but yeah. So yeah, Indian Wells would be amazing. Do you have any Bills questions for Kim before we let them go?
Yeah, I just wanted to know when that Josh Allen contract extension's coming, but that's about it.
Okay. All right. Well, I will. It's coming. It's coming. What it looks like, who knows? But it's coming. So, yeah. No, listen. He's been great for our franchise, and he's such a great part of our community as well. I mean, they've just really bonded really well together. Sometimes it doesn't always happen, even if you have a star quarterback, right? Sometimes they don't always quite bond in the town, but he certainly has.
I always believed in Josh. Mom, you said you kind of did, but I don't know. I'm on the fence about that. I was strong. I was I don't know. I like this kid's energy and it's competitive, footballer. He's gonna be good. And everyone's, his first year, it's I don't know. Can't throw the long ball.
No,
receivers. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And I was I told you guys, everyone was panicking. No, we don't know. And I don't know if it's just because I feel like I'm good at seeing people that have that potential, because I don't know, maybe because I'm just around sports all the time, but he just had that gamer mentality. Even when we weren't winning games, I was this kid's going to he's going to be good. Everyone needs to chill. And I don't know. I was right. But Mom, I guess you said that you also believed in him. Everyone freaks out. One interception.
No, I believed in him early on. I liked his attitude when we first met him before the draft. I thought it was, nothing was too big or, for him. And I don't know. I did like him early on. But you know, the more reasonable person inside of me is just, you know, listen, you know, as a team, you know, it's his first year, his second year, you also have to plan for plan B, because sometimes, you know, they develop, sometimes they don't. So,
I mean, yeah,
it's more the pregnant. Yeah.
He's still got to do well next year too, but it's just cool to see how much he's improved really from
yes
becoming in the league. So I would just like to say that I always believed in him.
You heard it here first.
Just like Terry always believed in Jesse, as I can. Yeah. So
there you go.
I mean, I've seen a lot of things in the NFL. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy go from, you know, throw 58% in his second year to like 70 something percent in his third. I mean, that's really a striking number.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of things came together. I think his connection with Diggs really helped, you know. I think the team around him helped, and, you know, that's with Sean and Brandon, you know, really helped building that support system. And listen, like you said, you know, some of these athletes, you got to depend on yourself, and he really went out there and worked that the whole summer on his game and what he needed to improve on. So, and it showed. So we'll see.
That's awesome.
And I guess my other question for you, since, you know, obviously Brian Daboll was a big part of that. He was in the coaching cycle. He, luckily for you guys, he ended up staying another year at least. And you guys put forth a proposal that I really liked, that was not adopted at these most recent meetings, yeah. But you guys injected some sanity into a really crazy process. And basically what they proposed was, instead of this mad scramble for coaches that sometimes starts even before the last regular season game, and certainly right after it with teams in the playoffs and coaches who are distracted, let's all put a pause on it until after the conference championship games, and not even allow hiring till after the Super Bowl, put everyone in a level playing field. Mm-hmm. I think it would be good for diversity. I think it would be good for, you know, the people, the playoff teams. And I think it would be good for the coaches of those teams. I guess, tell me what your thinking is on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, just what you said, that, you know, it can become a distraction, you know, if the point, to provide that level playing field. But I think, you know, our proposal, I think there were some things in it that concerned other, you know, people, the other teams, other owners. I think we all agreed that there's something there. We just don't know yet what the right answer is. As you mentioned, you know, providing opportunity for more diverse candidates, especially ones that are in the postseason. You know, if you think about like an Eric Bieniemy and with Kansas City, someone who should, you know, you would have thought would have been easily getting a job, hasn't yet, for I don't know what reason. I haven't been in those interviews, but one of the ideas that maybe it's because, you know, he's been in the postseason and had to wait so long and other teams want to get going. But at the same time, you know, you also want to think about, you know, maybe there's possible coaches or college coaches that, you know, aren't in the NFL system, and they're just sitting there, and, you know, now making them even wait even longer. So I don't know what the right answer is. I think we all agree that there needs to be maybe a better system that'd be more fair across the board. So I think that's what we're just shooting for. So we tabled it, but knowing that there's going to be more discussion around it.
I love it. Well, keep trying on that. Kim is one of the bright spots of our league.
Terry, I pay him to say that.
Terry's okay, and Kim is one of the bright spots of our league. And Jesse is my favorite tennis player and also a great NFL talent evaluator. Let the record show.
We'll add that to her bio.
I'm going to be side texting you before the draft to get a sense of like which players I should be highlighting around the league.
I don't know if I'm back. I'll probably just be looking at like ESPN's like like their picks and like narrowing it down. That's probably like my draft. But
okay. Well, this is amazing, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
good luck.
We'll see you very soon when humans are
all right.
Dang.